Now, after the funeral of Pope Francis yesterday, attention now turns to his successor. The process of choosing the next leader of the Catholic Church begins within the next fortnight. The system, which has been virtually unchanged for 800 years, is known as the Papal Conclave, a democratic process which involves cardinals working through multiple rounds of voting until a clear consensus emerges. There are 135 cardinal electors who will have a vote. Edward Penton is a Vatican expert. He's a senior correspondent with the National Catholic Register and an analyst at EWTN. I asked him earlier whether the 800-year-old process would be an intimidating experience for many of the cardinal electors who've never been involved in a conclave before.
Well, yes, I think it will be. It's a very august responsibility that all the cardinals have. And of course, it's probably the main task that they have, really. I mean, their main role is to advise the Pope. They're like his sort of cabinet, really. But this is really the main task, which, of course, has huge implications for the Church. So they'll go into it very aware of their real profound responsibility, I think.
The fact that Pope Francis chose 80% of the cardinals who will select the next pope, can we take it from that his fingerprints are likely to be on his successor, that the new pope might have a similar outlook to Francis?
Well, I think it certainly influences the outcome, yes. And many cardinals that he's chosen are very much do seem to have his sort of view and vision for the Church. But it's no guarantee, and history has shown that just because the Pope can fill many of the college with his own people, as it were, that they can still vote for somebody quite different, and that's been shown over the centuries. So yes, it's on the one hand, it has some influence, but it's not a guarantee of continuity.
And the choice that is facing the electors, it will be, I suppose, to maintain the more liberal path that Francis has chosen for the Church, or to take the Church back to more traditional values. So is this a conclave which is a fork in the road then for the Catholic Church?
Well, I think it could be. I think Pope Francis pushed the Church in a certain direction pretty forcefully, and that, I think, upset some of the cardinals. So I think there is a sort of movement within the college, I think, to move the pendulum back a little bit to the centre, and that may happen. But it depends, as we were just saying, because he has filled the college with the cardinals of his sort of thinking, that isn't guaranteed either. So it could be, there is a push for that, but whether it'll happen, it's anyone's guess, really.
And where is that push coming from? The people perhaps who saw Francis as a more divisive figure, you know, and who may want to see a change from the vision that Pope Francis had. Where is that coming from?
Well, I think there was a sense of, even among those who were perhaps supportive of his vision, I think there was a sense that it was getting very chaotic in the college and in the Church generally and in the Vatican. And I think there was a sense that, you know, there's a desire for more calmness, a more orderliness. And I think that would come probably, well, I don't know, but I think the sense is that would probably come from somebody perhaps more centrist, perhaps. Mm. So that's the general sense. And also, interestingly, I think there's a bit of a desire for the Italians to reclaim the papacy, perhaps, because the Italians have had it for 450 years up until John Paul II. And there is a sense that if they're to reclaim that sort of calmness, it may have to go back into the hands of the Italians. So that's also a push, I think, being felt.
And certainly, I think when you look at many of the lists of front-runner cardinals that have been published in recent days, there are quite a number of Italians among them, aren't there?
Yes, indeed. Yes. And really quite prominent ones. And yes, they're being pushed quite forcefully. There's Cardinal Pietro Parolin, of course, the Secretary of State, which is a very senior role and, in fact, has been the stepping stone to the papacy throughout history, recent history at least. So yes, it is that is certainly the case. I think there's maybe four or five quite key figures from the Italian Church.
And why is there that view that perhaps the Italians could help to recenter the Church?
Well, I think it, as I say, because they have that experience, they have that 450 years of basically holding the papacy. I was talking to a couple of Italian aristocrats fairly recently, and they were saying, you know, well, we've been through these sort of crises. We know how to handle it. It's time to bring it back to us, kind of thing. So I think that's the sort of sense some of them have. Yeah.
And then at the same time, you have very many of the newer cardinals from the developing world. I mean, how likely is it then that this conclave will be mindful of the fact that the Catholic Church is in decline in Europe and in North America, where church attendances have been falling steadily, and then it is growing in the global south, in Africa, parts of Asia, and in Latin America? I mean, how might those factors play a role in how this conclave plays out?
Yes, well, that's certainly one impact of the Pope Francis's choice of going to the periphery and finding cardinals who aren't usually from cardinalatial sees in the global south. And so that will have an impact. In particular, I think Asia is significant because the number of Asian cardinals has increased considerably since the last conclave, I think over double the number. So that will have certainly a bearing on the result, yeah.
How much politicking is involved here? I mean, do cardinals talk to each other before the process begins? Do they form alliances with each other?
Yes, well, there's certainly a lot of discussions beforehand. In the previous conclave, I remember hearing that, you know, certain cardinals were getting on the phone to different cardinals, pushing certain candidates, pushing Cardinal Bergoglio particularly at that time. And so we'll probably see that as well. They're allowed to do that. I mean, they're allowed to basically, obviously, they're allowed to talk with each other and propose candidates and recommend them. But once the conclave starts, any kind of campaigning has to stop.
And given the fact that so many of these cardinals will never have met each other before, might we see factions emerging along the lines of, you know, perhaps cardinals from the developing nations taking one approach and those from the Western nations, from Europe, from North America, taking a different type of approach?
Yes, and that's why it could possibly be quite a protracted conclave. And that's why it's so difficult to predict, because you will have these very different priorities coming into it from different parts of the world, and they'll be probably quite difficult to get consensus. At least that's the prediction. Whether it'll happen in reality, we'll have to see. But yes, that is one key factor.
And as you say, a notoriously difficult contest to predict. You mentioned Cardinal Pietro Parolin as one of the front runners. Who are the others?
Right. Well, there's another rising star in the Italian church is Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, who's the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem. He's only 60, but he has a strong, he's being considered really quite a strong candidate because he seems to bridge the gap between all sides of the church. And this is considered to be very significant, especially now when there is such division within the church. And so he's certainly becoming quite key. He's a Franciscan and has been in the Holy Land for, I think, 30 years now. And then there's other candidates like Cardinal Peter Erdo of Hungary. He's a strong canonist. He's considered somebody who will be able to bring the church back to sort of more centrist, doctrinally conservative. And also one of the criticisms of Francis' pontificate was that it became rather lawless and that a canonist is needed, somebody who knows the church law, to come back and put that right.
And when you say that the view is there that the church had become lawless, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think one of the things Pope Francis did, and, you know, I think he did it often for the best of intentions, not always. I think some of the things regarding sexual abuse and the way he handled those, I think were done not with due respect to the law and to justice. And then on doctrinal issues, he was willing to sort of push certain legal constraints aside to really convey his very broad and generous aspect of mercy of the church to the faithful. And so there was criticisms that to do all these things, he pushed the law aside. And so this is actually one of the big concerns of the late Cardinal George Pell, who was very keen that a certain doctrinal legality was returned, and canon law particularly, which is always geared to the salvation of souls, canon law. And so to put that aside, it kind of jeopardizes the church's mission, he believed.
So do you think then that there is a view among the cardinals that rather than continuing Francis's work, rather than continuing some of the reforms he tried to introduce, you know, things like elevating women in the church, although perhaps not to a level where they were given anything like equality. Do you think that the view is there that rather than finishing that work, the next cardinal will try to undo it?
Well, it all depends, of course, on who they choose. I think there was some concern that he was going down paths which can't be really can't be done, like going down a path towards women's ordination, although that was never seriously on the cards. I think there was a concern that was sort of being pushed. He was facing pressure also from one side of the church, which was pushing for these kind of things, which I think upset those on the more traditional wing of the church. And so I think there will be some sort of pushback against that, because I think it did cause quite a bit of concern among many of the cardinals.
There are then significant challenges for the next pope. Will he lead an institution that is incapable of significant change then?
Well, I think the church always moves a bit of a snail's pace. I mean, it thinks in centuries rather than in years. I think if there was one concern that was kind of prominent in Pope Francis' pontificate, as I kind of alluded to already, which was that he pushed things too fast down a certain path. And I think there's a sense that a certain more moderate pace would be welcome. So it's not that the church won't change. She's always reforming, of course, but it has to be done. I think the sense is that it has to be done in a more moderate way. I think that's the general sense among many of the cardinals, yeah.
And that was Edward Penton, a Vatican expert and senior correspondent with the National Catholic Register and analyst with EWTN, speaking to us from Rome. Well, here in Ireland, the most recent census in 2022 indicated that 79% of the population identified as Roman Catholic, although that is a drop of almost 10 percentage points since 2016. Ireland, along with many countries across the EU, has seen church attendances falling. In a moment, we'll get some analysis on the challenges facing the Catholic Church in Ireland ahead of the election of a new pope. But first, our reporter Peter O'Connell spoke with people who have disengaged with the Catholic Church to find out why.
I was 21 when my marriage broke up. A few years down the line, I met a partner. I remember it was a Christmas Eve, and like that I went to confession. And I was told by that priest, because I was living with a partner, why I wasn't confessing that sin. And I said, I don't think it's a sin. So he said, I can't, he said, give you absolution, because I didn't confess that as a sin. And that Christmas Eve, I came out of the church, and I went home crying my eyes out. And I said, that's it. It was the church that turned me away from the church.
What would you like to hear from the new pope?
Well, first of all, I'd love to see an Asian or an African-American. Then I'd love to hear him telling the truth and compensate the people that were abused. And if people told the truth, maybe people would sit themselves in churches again and believe it, because that's why people turned away from the church, because they didn't tell the truth.
Is the church part of your life at the moment?
Not really, no. I can't say it is. I go to for anniversaries, weddings and stuff, but to me, it's not. It was a very big part of my life, but not anymore.
I was very religious, yes, but not as much as anymore. I'm more spiritual now.
And what drove you away from the church?
All the carry-ons at the church, and it's pretending to be something that you're not.
What would you like to hear from the new pope?
Everyone should be accepted, because everyone loved the church, you know, we all did, but not anymore.
I suppose I'd be spiritual, I'd have faith, I'd believe in a higher power. I don't know if I've that much belief in the church as an institution, to be honest. I think it needs radical reform.
What would you be looking for from the next pope?
For me, if they could, you know, allow priests to marry or let females become priests, I think the Catholic Church would be a lot, lot better for that. And I reckon it would bring back people to Mass.
Do you go to Mass yourself?
I don't anymore. I used to. You wouldn't see me in church now unless it was a wedding or a funeral.
I would still consider myself Catholic, but I don't go to Mass every week. but I do go at certain times of the year.
What would you like to hear from the new Pope?
I actually quite like the last Pope. I thought he was very open and considered all aspects of society. So I'd like to see it go along that trend again.
And those were some people speaking with our reporter Peter O'Connell in Limerick and in Clare. Let's talk now to Patsy McGarry, religious affairs correspondent with the Irish Times, who joins us from St. Peter's Square in Rome. Patsy, thank you for joining us. And we can hear from those voices that the Catholic Church is certainly less dominant in Irish society than it once was. But where does it stand today after the papacy of Pope Francis?
I think in Ireland and elsewhere in the Catholic world, it's probably in a better place than it was when Pope Benedict resigned in 2013. He had a very broad appeal to people within and certainly people without the church itself, not least young people. Here this morning, you had 200,000 young people for a jubilee of teenagers. It was supposed to be the canonization of Carlo Acutis, which had to be postponed because of the death of Pope Francis. But there was wild enthusiasm for these young people, and they turned what was to be a celebration of Blessed Carlo, it still is, into a celebration of Pope Francis. Mm. I should remark, by the way, Justin, that your EWTN Stroke Catholic Register commentator comes from a very, very narrow wing of the church. The word that's used about Francis, lawless, is very significant. They didn't like Francis. They make all secret of that during his papacy, and he did not like them because their criticism were deemed by him and others in the church to be unfair. And the word he used, he'd like to see among in the next pope, is moderate or moderation. He means traditional, going back to what it was under Benedict and the latter days of Pope John Paul, which I believe is unlikely because, as you talked about, the composition of the College of Cardinals, which will elect the new Pope, 80% of them are appointed by Francis. They may not know each other. They have met four times altogether so far this week. They will meet all through next week. During that process, they get a very good inkling into each other and who is likely to be the best man to lead the church forward. Clearly, Francis wanted what he has started to be continued, this synodal process, which began in 2021, which was a consultation from the ground up with Catholics and parishes throughout the world, then at parish and diocesan level, and then at national level. There are two synods of bishops here to consider that work. There's another one he announced from his hospital bed for 2028. And clearly he wants that to continue. And I suspect that would be the mood of certainly the people he appointed as cardinals.
OK. And just to come back then to the state of the Catholic Church in Ireland, if as you say, that the Catholic Church in Ireland is in a better place after the papacy of Pope Francis, why are we then still seeing a decline in attendances at masses and low numbers of people entering seminaries to become priests?
I don't think that's going to change, Justin. That there was a trend there anyhow. I mean, in the early 1970s, up to 93% of people attended Mass on a weekly basis. That began to go down through the 70s. The short blip after the visit of Pope John Paul to Ireland in 1979, and the underlying trend then continued itself and was going down. And then the abuse scandals happened, and it just exacerbated the underlying trend. And I think that's a huge factor in the status of the Catholic Church in Ireland today, the way it's mishandled the abuse issues, the way they literally covered it up, as we found out in report after report after report. It's a deeply damaged institution, certainly at authority level. What it has left is really due to the affection people have for the priests and the parishes on the ground, rather than respect for the bishops or the authority of the church. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. What you're seeing in Ireland is a complete change in terms of how people express their religious belief or their spirituality, to use a word used by one of your people there, one of the people you spoke to. People are beginning to pilgrimages are beginning to revive. People are climbing Kilpatrick, going to Loch Derg. Patterns are taking place all over Ireland, and there's been a revival. If you like, in ancient Irish Catholicism, which was the practice before the current form of Irish Catholicism was set up by Cardinal Cullen in the latter part of the 19th century. In other words, the church is going back to the past, or even, if you like, the future. It'll be a different church with far less numbers of priests. For instance, in Killala, in St. Neurodax Cathedral there 2 weeks ago, the 64 ministers were commissioned as ministers of the Eucharist, as readers, as people who would facilitate or take over funerals in particular, okay. A very sensitive area, and so far it's worked out very well.
Patsy, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That's Patsy McGarry, a religious affairs correspondent of the Irish Times, speaking to us from Rome. We'll be talking about Ukraine after this break.